Shalom Aleichem Chevra. Welcome to the new time zone as we changed the clocks last night. So the topic of today in Orchos Yosher, which is Simon Yud Aleph, Os Tes, is Tahara. It happens to be a very short piece. It won't take us that long to go through, but it's in a lot of ways one of the more challenging pieces in the entire Sefer, because it's something that in a lot of us, certainly for our lifestyle, are not used to. But Reb Chaim felt that it was something that was very important. So here's the background. The halacha lemaise, the straightforward halacha is that when it comes to davening, when it comes to learning, so technically speaking, there is no impact that a person being tameh has on his tefillos, on his learning Torah. That's as far as halacha goes. However, Ezra HaSofer made a takana in his time, the time when they rebuilt the second base of Migdash, that time period, that a person who was Motzi Zera, that means either he was intimate with his wife, or perhaps there were a dream or another way, however it's going to happen, but he was Motzi Zera, so he's not allowed with an Isser Derabana to learn Torah and to daven until he went to the mikveh and it removed the tumah, what's called Tumas Keri. However, the Gemara makes it clear, take a look at Brachas Chafetz Man Aleph, that after Ezra made such a takana, it became very clear that it was something that Klal Yisrael was not able to maintain. It was too much for them. And maybe because they weren't, it was taking time, too much of time away from Torah, whatever the reasons are. And so the decree was nullified. We have a rule that any takana that Rova Tibur Einu Chalalim Bo Lamoid Bo that Klaisel can't maintain is Batal Mavutal, is null and void. So while we're on the topic, let me just explain something. I believe that this is said over in the name of Rosh Soloveitchik as well, that the Sanhedrin has several roles that they play. One role is as the decider of Halacha L'maise. Whatever they decide is the Halacha. It doesn't mean that nothing else is Torah. Just means that that's what has to be observed in practice. But they have another role as well, and that is as the representatives of Klal Yisrael. So for example, we have a mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, to count the days between the Omer offering its brah and then Shavuos. So there's a mitzvah Sfiras HaOmer. To every individual, we know, we make a bracha, we count, and we count Sfiras HaOmer. What about the years of Shemitah, the years of Yovel? Those also have to be counted. Is anybody counting those? So the answer is that there are many things that are done for Klal Yisrael by our representative. We have a representative, and the representative is the Sanhedrin. So the Sanhedrin has these two rules. One is the decider of the practical halacha, and the second one is as the representative of Klal Yisrael to accomplish things that the Jewish people need to accomplish. So if their role is to maintain the Kedusha, the Tahara, the well-being of Klal Yisrael in so many ways, and that's why they have all of these Gzeiros and Takanos, is for our well-being, so that we don't mess things up by accident. People sometimes get upset that they can't ride a horse on Shabbos because everybody wants to ride a horse on Shabbos. And so why can't I ride a horse on Shabbos? You know, I'm not going to break a branch off of a tree and smack the horse's tuchus to make it go faster. I probably would. Wouldn't you? Anyway, but so there were takanas that were made for our benefit because people lose track. People lose track of themselves. And because people lose track of themselves, so Chazal made sure in certain areas that were so easy to fall into the trap of breaking Shabbos or whatever the case may be, they made all kinds of zeros to for our well-being. So they have our best interest in mind in everything that they did and everything that Sanhedrin did. But because there are representatives, what gives them their koach, their right to make these types of decrees, is that they're serving as our representatives for our best interest. If a situation would come up and it turns out it really wasn't in our best interest, then they cease to be our representatives. In which case, if they went ahead and made a decree that was not in our best interest, and the proof that it's not in our best interest is that, well, we couldn't do it, we couldn't maintain it, so then they cease to be our representatives. If they're not our representatives, then the decree is null and void. And that's how I've heard explained this principle, that if there is a decree that Rova Tibur that they can't maintain, so then the whole decree is batal and mevutal, is null and void because they cease to have the right, the authority to make such a decree since it's not in our best interest. They cease to be our representatives. Okay, be that as it may, let's take a look at what Reb Chaim says about Tahara and Mikveh in our times. It's the opinion of many of the earlier ones that when we said that the requirement, the Dindar Abana, the Gzera of Ezra, that a person has to go to the mikveh before he learns Torah or before he davens, if he was Motzi Zera, a seminal emission, so that was only nullified vis-a-vis Torah because Klal Yisrael couldn't handle the Bittul Torah that resulted. But it's still in effect vis-a-vis davening. So that's what many say. Again, not everyone agrees about this, but that's what many say, that it's still in effect officially, that it's usher to daven until one goes to the mikvah after he had had some form of seminal mission. That's the opinion of many very important poskim. And even the Rambam, who does hold at the end of his halachas and Kriya Shema, that it is totally batal, mevutal, is nullified even vis-a-vis tefillah. In the Rambam's time, there was a significant machlekes between him, he was living in Egypt, and the Gedolim that were living in Babel, the Goinim in Babel, Babylonia, Behesh in Iran. And he answered them that the truth of the matter is that him personally, so he was never missed an opportunity to go to the mikveh whenever he was in one of these situations. Even afilusha achas, he went immediately. But when he wrote a sefer, the Mishnah Torah, so he committed himself only to write what is strictly speaking the halacha, and not chumras, and not additional midos chasidus and whatnot. K'moshi kas Rabbeinu Yonah, perikim lebrachas, as Rabbeinu Yonah spells out. V'yachti b'shulchan aruch nifsach ki ha-Rambam, and the shulchan aruch paskins, like the Rambam, that it is null and void, even vis-a-vis tefillah. V'komakam kas v'achreinim, shanoeg lipol tavay lebracha. The achronim write that anyone who maintains a custom of going to the mikvah after having being moitzi zera, so he should have blessing. The name of the Prima Gadim. The Rambam, Atzma, the Rambam himself, writes himself, Minig Pashit, the Shinar Svara, that in these places in Shinar, that's when, interesting, with the place where the everyone ended up, the bodies all came after the Mabul, and in Svarad, in the Svaradi lands, Shane Valkari, that a person who was a Valkari, he doesn't daven until he at least washes himself off in water. So I don't know if the lashon over here means specifically tevila, which is how it's being understood, or maybe it was what's called tisha kavin, that there is a concept that if a person has 9 kavin of water that's poured on him, like he takes a 3-minute shower and he stays under the water for 2 to 3 minutes, so then that's also sufficient to remove this type of Tumas Keri, be that as it may, v'shalas chubas mina shamayim, which is one of the Rishonim, probably a Tosfos, shalim yesh la'agav atilas Ezra l'tefila. And they were asked if the one should is allowed to be. So let me make sure I spelled this out. Did I say this out? That the minig that was widespread in both Shinar and Bavel and in the Sephardi lands is that they did not daven until at least they did what the Rambam refers to as roches, called basaru b'mayim, washing all of his body in water. And in the Shalash Shuas Minash Shamayim from the Baalei Tosfos, Shalim Yesh Lahagel, can we be lenient when it comes to this thing called Tevilas Ezra, going to the mikvah according to Ezra Tevilah for davening? V'yeshivu, and he answered him, V'avadim as Hashem Alekeichem, that the Pasuk that's the source for davening is to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That we say in davening, V'avadim as Hashem Alekeichem, V'avdo b'chol avavchem is the Pasuk from Shema. Havayom ezo Tevilah, and that is a reference to davening, and it's referred to as avoida, service. Be'ev shartami makrib korban, and service we know is a language of bringing korbanos, avoda. So it's called avoda shebalev, service of a kadosh baruch hu in the heart. So there's a parallel here between korbanos and davening. Can a person that's tamei be makrib a korban, bring a sacrifice? Bim tamei shart, it's not, of course not. Bim tamei shart tumos, And if you're going to say, well, what do you mean? But there are other kinds of tumah, right? If a person went to a funeral, or a person involved in a levaya, whatever, and he's not allowed to daven or interpret until he goes and he gets part. He can't even get part of duma anyway. Maybe he has to go to the mikvah. It doesn't impact his davening and his learning. So you should know that there's a significant difference between a tumah that happens to a person that's not something that's under his control versus something that is under a person's control. There's also a difference in severity between a tumah that comes from the outside and a tumah that results from the inside of the body of a person, which is much more severe tumah. And when Ezra made his takana, it was with a divine insight into the koach of tefillah and its impact on tefillah and whatnot. With ruach hakodesh. Wow, and this is a very harsh statement, that this thing that people are davening when they have not gone to the mikveh after being royal kari, so that actually is causing a lengthening of the galus. Because if the prayers of the Jewish people were, so to speak, you know, were more appropriate, were proper without this element of tumah, wow, so our tefillos all already would have been received vis-a-vis the geula. Ad kan l'shona, that's the end of the quote. V'magid mishar l'beis Yosef, the Beis Yosef who learned with a malach, amar le malach, the malach told him, al tevat al tamid tefillos ba'al nekirin, even though he doesn't pass his way in Shulchan Aruch, but he writes that the Malach told him that him personally should not nullify this tevila for a Balkari, because you have no idea the reward for it. The Rizal quoted, of course, by his Talmud, Ruchayim Vital. The Rizal didn't write anything. Ruchayim Vital writes in Shar Ruch HaKodesh, Tavdalin, and when it comes to understanding Torah, so there's certainly nothing that is more preventative and more necessary to understanding than going to the mikveh. Because the truth is, a person has to be pure all the time. Ad kan l'shoinai, at the end of the quote. V'chein kaz reishis chachma v'chesed Avram v'ayin sham sheherichu basen. And it's in other places quoted as well. V'chazal amru, back in the Gemara in Brachas Chavez Amid Aleph, kol ha-machmir ba al atzmoi, marichin loy yama vushanasam. That if a person is machmir and this tevila on himself, not on other people, but on himself, so then he lengthens his days. Baharbe gedoli yisrael bidol mimeyam, there are many gedolim that never went a day without going to the mikvah, can move until the same as it speaks about in all his farim and books about them, biographies and whatnot. V'ri'isi v'sefer echad, kesein ezecher echad, I saw in a certain sefer, I don't remember where, if you take a look at which Svarim, you know, there are a lot of Talmidei Chacham that have written Svarim over the years. Not all of them were accepted as something that's mainstream Klal Yisrael Limud that Klal Yisrael learns. But those that were accepted, Ezra. Wow. Those are the ones where the author was careful about Tevilas Ezra. Nowadays, the mikvos everywhere. It's very easy to go to the mikvah and go and dip. Certainly, if a person is able, it's appropriate that a person should be careful about this. And all of this is talking about during the week. Aval Pirshuk gets a little tricky. Aval B'Shabbos, Nechleku B'Zeh Gedol Yisrael. Right, so as you probably are aware, so there is a special mitzvah for husbands and wives to be intimate on Leil Shabbos. And because of that, it creates a very serious shaila about Tevilas Ezra on Shabbos morning. So what are we supposed to do about that? So he says, this is a big machlekes about whether or not you should or should not be going to the mikvah on Shabbos. And therefore, he says, we don't have the ability to say yes or no. But for those that are doing it, so there are three things you have to be careful about. Number one, that the mikvah should not be hot. Rak kara by patient. It has to be on the cool side or lukewarm, like a room temperature mikvah. I'm just gonna say that there are very, 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 very few mikvahs like that. There are from time to time a kalt mikvah, but 99% of them are all heated, so I don't know what to say about that. Number two, shayzaru mo'ed mitzchita seyar, kize iser gamur. You have to be very careful not to wring out, to squeeze out your hair, because that is mamash and iser on Shabbos. So what do you do? And the best advice is not to touch your hair at all. That's nice and easy for a person that doesn't have a lot of hair. If you're dealing with long payas, you're dealing with a beard, it's not so pashut. Okay. Number three, that a person who has water on his body, that, you know, he's still dripping wet. So that water is not something that he wants on his body, and therefore it's considered like he's carrying that water. So that's going to be a problem if you're in a place where you can't carry. But so what do you do about going outside if there's no way room? You're not allowed to walk with that water for Amos and Rosh Hashanah. So the advice is, either you sit around in the mikveh and you, I don't know, it's a schmoozing time until you dry off, or you never stop moving until you get to your house. This is a detail in Hilchos Shabbos that when it comes to the malacha of carrying, so it requires two things. It requires picking it up and putting it down. Picking it up in Runnershus and putting it down in a second. So if a person, so to speak, is carrying this water from the mikveh, let's say, through the Rosh Hashanah, through the street to get to another house, if he stops at one point at a light, at a stop sign, you know, to cross the street, let's say he stops. So that's considered to be hanochah. It's as if he put down the water. And now when he starts moving again, he's picking up the water and continuing again. So he's saying the best advice is to never stop moving. Now, that may be a little dangerous, but in Bnei Brak, it's not because there are no cars on Shabbos. But if there are cars coming, you have to be very careful you don't get hit by one. But in any case, that's the advice, that if you are dripping wet, that you shouldn't stop moving, because that way, we're talking about a double derabanan, because the Havim Rosh Hashanah and Rosh Hashanah Kederach Karmelis, then most of our streets are not a Rosh Hashanah and Dar Raisa. It's only going to be considered a Karmelis. So you're going from the mikvah Rosh Hashanah to your house, to the shul, which is a Rosh Hashanah, through the street, which is only a Karmelis, a Nisa Derabanan. And the carrying that you're doing, since it does not involve a picking it up and putting it down, because you're picking it up in the mikvah, not putting it down until you get back to another Rosh Hashanah, so that is only going to be an Isser Derabanan as well, so it's a double Derabanan. So therefore, we're allowed to be lenient on a double Derabanan whenever it's the purpose of a mitzvah. So since this is for the purpose of a mitzvah, that a person should be able to, it's interesting, it's considered a mitzvah, even though it's a chumrah, mikar adin, that it's not necessary. But he still considers that to be a makom mitzvah, and therefore would be mutter as long as you don't stop moving. So for example, it would be considered a mitzvah if you're going to daven. And that is what his father, the stipler, would do. He would go to the mikvah on Shabbos, and he would not stop moving until he got to shul. Take a look over there, the Chazanish, who said that that's what women should do as well when they are coming home from the mikvah on Friday night, if they are still wet as well, because often they don't shave their heads and they have long hair, and that could be an issue. Story time. Learning Sfarim that strengthen Kedusha. Someone asked Rav Chaim how he strengthened himself in areas of Kedusha. He said to learn Reishis Chachma Shara Kedusha and to look into the Sefer Karyana de Igarta. Indeed, he counseled his grandsons to do so. How precious are Sfarim? There is an opinion that one should recite the blessing of Shehechiyanu on the publication of a new Sefer. However, because the matter is not universally agreed upon, Rechaim's custom is to recite the blessing on a new fruit and have in mind the Sefer that he wrote as well. Chazanish also did not say Shehechiyanu on his Sfarim, Rechaim said. Even though his joy over each Sefer was enormous, each time he published a new Sefer, Chazanish would say that for him it was like the birth of a son. Why? Someone asked Rav Chaim. Don't we say the bracha tov v'hameitiv on publication of a sefer? Because that's the bracha that when it's good for you, you make shechiyanu. If it's good for you and someone else, let's say you bought a Ferrari and you're going to take your children around in your Ferrari and drive around your family in your Ferrari, so then you'll make a shechiyanu, make a tov v'hameitiv, because it's not just benefiting you, it's benefiting your whole family. Maybe it's not benefiting you or your family if it's a Ferrari. But if it was an Odyssey, in this domain it is. That bracha is recited when something will be beneficial for others. So if the bracha on a sefer should tov v'hameitiv, not shechiyanu, Replied Reb Chaim, who's to say the Sefer is good for others? Perhaps the Sefer serves no purpose for other people. Besides, one cannot be certain that everything written in the Sefer is perfectly true. Perhaps someone will disprove its contents, and the bracha will be a bracha levatala. Wow. Touching on Reb Chaim's great affection for his farm, his illustrious son-in-law, Reb Shaga Steinman, had this to say. For my bar mitzvah, Rabbeinu gave me one of his farm. Afterward, the Rebbe told me that she had asked the Rav if it would not be better to send a member of Steinman's family a more respectable gift. He replied, "The sfarim that I have written are the most precious in my eyes." Reb Chaim heartily encourages writing down Chiyushei Torah and authoring sfarim. He learned this approach from the Chazon Ish, who often urged Bnei Torah to write down their original Torah thoughts and to publish them. The Chazon Ish believed that one who benefited most from this was the author himself, would thereby study the sugya thoroughly and clarify its topics for himself. There's nothing, nothing more true than that. But that's really, really true, not that it's my eskama, but if you want to really know something, teach it. A certain Talmud Chacham, who frequently published books, once asked Reb Chaim, it says in the Mishnah Berurah, quoting the Sefer Chasidim, that when the Romans were about to kill Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, he asked Reb Shimon Kohen Gadol, "My brother, why am I being taken out to be killed. Rabbi Shmuel said, "Perhaps it's because you taught in public and received benefit from divrei Torah." Rabbi Shimon said, "My brother, you have comforted me." In that case, continued the Talmud Chacham, maybe I should worry that in publishing Sfarim, there's an element of deriving benefit from divrei Torah, and one could be judged for that. Is it preferable to avoid authoring Sfarim because of that? Rabbi Chaim answered that such matters are not at all applicable today. For each sefer that is published, there are many detractors, mockers, and people looking for errors. And even those who do praise the sefer do so for their own personal interests. If only, he concluded, authoring sfarim could bring about appropriate kavod ha-Torah. A segula for children. A man came to see Reb Chaim for advice and a bracha. "It's been a number of years since I married," he said, "and I have not been blessed with children. My advice to you is that you should write a sefer of chidushei Torah," Reb Chaim said. Sometime later, the same man returned to Reb Chaim and told him he had done as instructed. He had published a sefer of chidushei Torah, and not long afterward merited his firstborn son. "What's the source of this segula?" the happy father asked. Reb Chaim replied, "The source is Maseches Chulin 59b, where it says, 'A man's stomach will be sated with the utterances of his mouth. Divrei Torah are considered like a man's offspring.'" Interesting. Another man who received the same advice from Reb Chaim also published his Eruv after he became a father. Sometime later, he had a second edition printed with additions, and he had another child. When he published the third edition, he merited the birth of his third son, and by the fourth, it was surprised no one to hear that a fourth child was about to be born. "Tell your son," Reb Chaim told the father of the happy author, "that the number of children he has will equal the number of sperm he puts out." To fill the mikveh. Everyone who lived in central Eretz Yisrael was witness to the rain that fell at the height of the summer of 5773, but the reason it fell is known by few. It was after Pesach. The new mikveh in Shigun Gimel had just been completed, but it could not be used until the reservoir was filled with rainwater. But it was not the rainy season in Eretz Yisrael. Would this structure stand empty until the following winter? The head of the Bnei Brak municipality, Rabban Rubinstein, asked Reb Chaim, "Was it permissible to pray for rain at a time when rain was considered an unpropitious sign? It's a kalela that late in the season, it destroys the crops." Reb Chaim waved a dismissive hand. "To daven specifically is forbidden, but don't worry. The rain won't stop falling until the reservoirs are filled." In the coming days, the weather turned surprisingly cold. Powerful, unseasonable rains began to fall and continued for several days. One of Reb Chaim's grandsons brought him a sweater. "Why a sweater?" Reb Chaim asked. "We're already saying worried at all." For Reb Chaim, everything was measured by halachic concepts. If they were saying worried at all, it was a sign that summer had arrived. And Granson explained, "An unnatural rain is falling. They say it's a result of Sabbath's bracha for filling the reservoir of the new mikveh." "If the reservoir is filled with rainwater," Reb Chaim said, "then summer can come." The grandson checked, and it turned out that the reservoir was not yet completely full. Hearing this, Reb Chaim issued a bracha for the rain to continue, and so it was. The rain continued for several more days, Reb Chaim said. "It is raining because there is a mikvah that needs to be filled." A few days later, on Erev Shabbos, he told Reb Chaim that some 150 liters of water was still lacking. He said, "Mirtz Hashem." Over Shabbos, a mighty quantity of rain poured down, something that no one ever remembered happening at that time of the year. "It's due to the merit of the mitzvah of mikveh," Reb Chaim said. When the water had reached the top of the reservoir, the wondrous rain stopped falling. Meriting righteous children. Two women traveled from one of the cities in the center of the country and poured out their troubles to the Rebbetzin. One said that she was married for 10 years, still childless. Second said she had older children for several years have been craving in vain another child. The two of you live a life of Torah with suitable holiness and purity, she asked them. The answers were divided. One asked, what's that? The second told Sosef, sometimes. Hearing these answers, the Rebbetzin said, in that case, it is a sign that Hashem loves you. Hashem wants you to have pure and righteous children, the kind that are born only to those who live their lives in holiness and purity. There's no such thing as sometimes. This is a mitzvah that must be observed carefully always. She gave them the name of someone in their city who could guide them in observing these mitzvahs of holiness and purity, and they promised to go to her and learn exactly how to keep the mitzvah, and you'll see now Hashem will help the rabbis and bless them radiantly. And finally, at the bris milah, the Chida said that a son to get a bris milah should ask for three things on the baby's behalf. Number one, that he should be a tzaddik. Number two, that he should safeguard the bris. And number three, that he should have a holy neshama. I add a fourth thing, said the Chida, that he should merit a long life and years of good health. Have a great day.